This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by Poe's Magic Conference, coming up March 15th, 16th, and 17th in Baltimore, Maryland. For more information, you can visit our convention guide page here on the MagicWordPodcast.com. Also, there's some more information that the organizer, Vince Wilson, will tell us later on in this podcast. I also want to remind everybody that we are still going on with the contest that we started last week for a copy of Maximum Entertainment 2.0 that's offered by our friend Ken Weber. And you just need to go over to the website and fill out the form. And there has been a lot of interest in this book. So you need to jump in then too. Who knows? Could be your name that gets randomly selected. This week, we are going to be speaking with someone I visited with at the Magi Fest in Columbus earlier this year. And I have known this gentleman for quite some time. We talk about that a little bit in the podcast, so I'm not going to reiterate that. But basically, someone who is kind of hard to nail down because he doesn't work at a lot of magic conventions. He's not a magician in the typical form. He is a mathemagician, someone who actually does magic with numbers. And it is true magic. The guy is a genius, and just to see him work, it's amazing. And then he can teach you how to do it, pretty much. He does have several books out. He's got TED Talks that have been seen by millions, and he is just an amazing gentleman. And although he didn't get into backgammon, that's another one of his side interests and a sincere, serious interest that he has in backgammon as well, because that employs some mathematics then as well. But he is a full-time professor at the Harvey Mudd University out in California, but he goes on sabbatical around the world from time to time and does appear at magic conventions, as I said. Since we're talking about math, and we are talking with a mathematician here this week, I thought it important that I correct myself on a math error that I made last week. I mentioned that it was leap day, and that occurs every 28 years, that is, on a Thursday. And so I had calculated that it was going to be 2032. Well, I was only off by about 20 years. It's actually 2052, and that was pointed out to me by another listener. Thank you, Charlie Randall, for paying attention. Anyhow, got that corrected, and I thought it'd be an important thing to mention here this week, since I know that we'd have a mathematician who would correct me otherwise if I was trying to do that calculation. It's just simple math. Anyhow, I stand corrected. I would suggest, by the way, that you might want to keep a calculator handy, because at some point during this talk, he invites you to see if you can actually do a calculation on your calculator faster than he can do it. And you'll see what I'm talking about. It's pretty amazing. You could have the opportunity, obviously, to pause this and get a calculator and get ready for that. But I'm just telling you in advance, he does a little demonstration during this conversation as well. He's a great guy and has a great mind. And I know that you will have a great time enjoying our guest this week. So please welcome Mr. Arthur Benjamin here on The Magic Word. My guest today is someone that some of you may know, and I'm going to guesstimate that most of you don't. And that's the reason, because that he is not someone who is widely known in the magic fraternity from the standpoint of not having tricks that are published in Linking Ring Parade or some other places, nor a frequent attendee or performer at magic conventions. He's got his own life that he's living, actually. And it's magic related from the standpoint, it's not math magic, but he does talk a lot about math because he is a math professor at the Harvey Mudd University in California, and from time to time will take sabbaticals, so he kind of tours the world, and he gives magicians an opportunity to study at his feet and to learn kind of some of the tips and techniques that he teaches some of his students, I'm sure, then as well. Please welcome my guest today, Arthur Benjamin. Hey there, Arthur. How are you, sir?
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
It is really great. I kind of feel like I'm coming full circle, because as we were talking earlier, I think you were on one of the earlier podcasts that I had done, even before I think I actually had this podcast. I was working with Dodd Vickers at the time, and he has the Magic Newswire. And I had submitted to him something, because when we were in Bath, England at the convention there, I remember going back in your dressing room and seeing all these papers numbers and charts and things that you had that you were preparing, you know. And we were chatting a little bit, and it was just kind of some content of the convention, because at Magic Conventions, I give daily reports, and that was one of the things we were reporting, you know, from that convention. So you can kind of go back and listen to that. But this is going to be a little bit more in-depth kind of thing, and a deep dive into kind of who you are. And just by explanation, would you call yourself a mathemagician, or how do you?
Oh, for sure. That is my brand, a mathemagician.
Okay. Because math magic.
If you Google mathemagician, I think it sends.
You're one in the top 10.
Puts my name up there at Wikipedia. Yeah.
But really, I think the group you're most well known for are the TED Talks. I mean, those are because you've had like millions, I'm sure.
I had three TED Talks, and they've been viewed over 50 million times.
50 million times. What do you think it is that resonates with people that, you know, that they want to hear?
The one that's gotten the most views is the one that's part of my show, which is doing math faster than a calculator. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I, we probably didn't have calculators put in our hands until we were in high school.
That's correct.
You know, but now kids are given calculators early on in elementary school.
Right.
And so I think there's less of an opportunity for people to really acquire this, you know, what you might call calculating talent. Mm-hmm. So I think when they see people who have it, it's just that much more remarkable.
Did you use slide rule? I mean, when you were a kid, I mean, before calculation?
I was just at the age where,
that was going out.
It was going out like there was an eighth grade science teacher who would teach slide rule, but it was like, I'm just about to be phased out. Yeah.
I think whenever I mention slide rule, some people who are listening to this, particularly younger people, are going, huh? It's kind of like if I mention abacus, it's like, what?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure, for sure.
All those things have been things of the past. And the same thing we're talking about calculators, about how that, yeah, it wasn't until we were early in our lives that we were introduced to that. And now, of course, they're every place, they're endemic. I mean, they're built into even your phone. I mean, not just your phone, but I mean, on your watch, you know?
Oh, for sure. And I don't think that's a bad thing for the most part. I mean, it's a time-saving device that allows you to think about more interesting things. On the other hand, people's sense of numbers is probably not what it used to be.
That's one of my pet peeves. And I'm sure you hear that all the time then as well about whenever you're going to be going to a restaurant or you're just going to Starbucks or wherever else, if you give them cash and if you give them, let's say it's going to be whatever, and you give them some change, it's like they can't calculate the change
for
or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and do you think it's because that there's not the emphasis in math that there was when we were younger, or that it's easier to use a calculator or the cash register to do that for you?
Well, the cash registers are set up to be sort of human proof. Mm-hmm. And so, in some ways, if you're making lots and lots of decisions all day, it's comforting to have a machine that does it all for you.
Yeah, so make sure you're not going to mess up.
Not going to mess up, right? If it doesn't cost you much time to just type it in, then just type it in. But that said, people aren't as comfortable with numbers, even simple money-making numbers, as they used to be.
No, I when you say used to be, I think that that's true. Because today, they are not taught, I say they, I don't think that balancing your checkbook is something that people learn in school. Or,
maybe,
you know.
Maybe so. What's a checkbook? A lot of your younger ones will say now.
Yeah,
so.
I'm starting to feel like an old man then, too. You know, that's true.
Yeah, not
because
true.
Everything's
not true.
Done online, you know, and that you can just look at the what your balance is. And if you've got an issue or something, you're not having to balance anything because it's all done automatically online for you like that.
Very true.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing as far as the direction we're going with that?
I think calculators are and computers are a great tool, and they allow us to focus on, you know, what we're plugging into the calculators. The mechanics of doing the multiplication or division or subtraction, leave that to the machine. But knowing what numbers to be putting in, you know, as you're trying to make decisions about buying insurance or a mortgage you know, what's the best deal at the magic shop, you know, those are the that's what requires human thought.
So it's garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. If you don't put in good numbers, then the answer doesn't matter.
Yeah. Do you see a correlation then also from what you do directly into technology with bits and bytes and zeros and
well,
ones and zeros?
You know, I guess all that I'm doing, and I can demonstrate it for you in a minute if you'd like, is, you know, because anyone can, in principle, do large math arithmetic problems on paper. What I'm working with is a memory issue, which is we can only hold on to about 8 to 10 digits at a time. And I'm no exception. But I'm using the memory very efficiently, which allows me to calculate things. To some degree, computer scientists have to deal with memory issues as well, but on a much bigger scale.
But I
want to send the message that, you know, a lot of people think that arithmetic is everything, that that's math. No, it's the starting point for math. And the people who are developing your AI tools today are people who know a lot more than arithmetic. They know their algebra. They know their calculus. They know their probability and statistics and linear algebra. And it's all based on advanced mathematics topics like that.
And you have to have some fundamental knowledge, you know.
Well, and it starts with arithmetic. And if you have a bad arithmetic experience, it can derail you for life. And if you have a good one, then it can lead to unlimited opportunity.
And that goes to, I think, having a good teacher. I've heard time and again about, I wish I would have had someone like Arthur Benjamin teaching me. He said, I would be amazing in math.
You know, if I a good had... teacher can make all the difference. And unfortunately, a bad teacher can make all the difference too. I mean, you watch somebody who says, well, I had this terrible seventh grade math teacher. I've never been able to do math since.
Right.
And I say to that person, well, you don't want that. It's bad enough that you had to have that seventh grade teacher. Don't give that teacher more power that it affects the rest of your life. Succeed in math in spite of that bad teacher experience. But I want to say connecting magic to teaching is I'm a much better teacher because of magic. I am, when I was in high school, like many magicians, I started off doing kid shows. I was the Great Benjamini doing magic shows throughout the east side of Cleveland, Ohio.
You were not a math whiz back then.
I was, but you
kind of separated the two.
I think I've always wanted to be an entertainer. For as long as I was a attention-seeking 5-year-old, I loved being center of attention. And I would do magic shows for birthday parties, like many did.
Sure.
And how do you entertain 5-year-olds for half an hour, right? And the answer is, well, you need audience participation. You need, it's not a monologue. It's a dialogue. You need, humor. You need to have the arc of a story. You need a punchline. And when I started teaching, when I had my first college experiences as a teaching assistant, the only way I knew how to approach an audience was from my experiences as a magician.
Good point.
And that style of being interactive, of asking questions of my class, of finding a punchline, finding something that was really exciting to me, and I want to get them excited about that material. That's what made me a better teacher. And I really give magic the credit for
putting you in that position.
Putting me in that position. And I think of my classroom. I think of each lecture as a show. Now, I'm not full energy, you know, take a bow kind of magic in my classroom, but I'm always thinking about what I'm saying and how it's going to be perceived by my audience, the audience being the classroom.
The classroom.
Yeah. So I think magic is one of the best hobbies to have alongside someone, something else. You know, advice I give to young magicians and who are also, say, talented in some other arena, like, say, their computer science or mathematics or engineering. Right. I say, don't give up. Do both. Don't give up the math for the magic. Do them both, and you'll do both better. You'll be a better engineer or dentist or whatever because of your magic skills. You may be surprised that you might get more opportunities to perform because you are invested in another community. Like most of the shows that I do are for schools, colleges, universities within the collegiate math community.
Right.
They know me as the guy who does magic. You in the magic community know me as the guy that does math.
Yeah.
and there's great synergy between them. And so advice I'd want to give to the young ones listening to this interview is do both. Mm-hmm. And don't give up one for the other.
What I hear you saying is to broaden your horizons and don't stay in just one thing and learn about as much as you can. And magic is just kind of one field, and you might find there are applications because, again, you started out as Benjamini and you were doing, you know, just regular magic type of thing.
Yeah.
And then eventually found, well, I could do magic with math. And so if you are an engineer or whatever, scientist or whatever that you have an interest in, that you can kind of transition.
And the magic you do as an engineer doesn't have to be math or engineering related. Sure. I'm just saying that.
Here's how you build a bridge. Here's making a bridge appear.
Yeah, exactly. The way I got into the math show that I do is as I was towards the end of high school and I was getting invitations to perform for older audiences. For a while, I was very much into mentalism. I thought, oh, magic of the mind would suit me well.
Right.
And my father said, you know, why don't you put in some of that number stuff, you know, the fast math that you do? You know, he'd show me off at parties and stuff. And I said, okay, I'll try that. And to my surprise, it got the best reaction of the show, probably because it was genuine, right?
I mean,
people can sense when something's genuine versus something's fake. And so
I know you're not really bending spoons with your mind.
Right, right. And you know, no matter how much you try to be realistic, there's going to be that element of doubt that you can really read their mind or predict the future. But but when someone pulls out a calculator here, I'll do a quick little demonstration here. To square a number on the calculator, like 5, you press 5, then times, then equals,
right?
That gives you 25.
Right.
Here, give me a 3-digit number.
When you turn it that way, it goes into a scientific calculator.
It went scientific on me. All right. Here, give me a 3-digit number and I will try and square it.
Okay,
as quickly as you can do on the calculator.
For people who are listening to this, I'm holding a calculator facing me only, so he can't see it. He's looking then at me. So do I tell you the number I'm putting in?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to hit in 565.
It's 319,225.
Yes, I couldn't type that in fast enough.
So I had developed these math techniques. You call them tricks, but they're not tricks. It's not like someone's feeding me the answer. I'm actually calculating it.
Yeah, it's not like you got an earpiece.
I don't have any. You know, when I started performing this, like at magic conventions when I was in college, there was all the suspicion was, got to be a hidden earpiece or what's he doing? You know, but then I would do that for them right in front of their face and I'd explain it to them. That's the thing I love about the math that I do and that I perform is that I do a show and tell. So for most audiences, I'll do half the show is showing off and the rest of it is actually explaining to them what it is that I'm doing. And it's very refreshing, very honest. And at some point I dropped the mentalism early on and influenced by people like James Randi, Carol Fox even was saying, you know, Art, you don't need the mentalism stuff. Just stick with what's genuine. Mm-hmm. And that was some of the best advice I ever
got. Wow, you opened up a lot of things to talk about there.
Believe me.
when you mentioned Carol Fox, of course, being like in this area, are you from Ohio or from the Midwest?
I grew up in Cleveland. In fact, that's why I'm here at the Magi Fest. I said to Josh, Jay, I said they had me at the session last year in London.
London, right.
And I said, you know, I'd love an excuse to get close to Cleveland. So, how would you like to have me at the Magi Fest? I said, oh, that would be so great. Yes, please.
Yeah.
I went to college in Pittsburgh at Carnegie Mellon University. Mm-hmm. I went to Abbott's Magic Convention in Colon, Michigan a couple of times when I was in college. I went to the IBM in Evansville, Indiana, where I saw some guy my age named Lance Burton win the gold medal.
The first gold medal.
Magic's been such a wonderful, hobby. And yet at the same time, it's become a very important part of my life. The books that I've written are all, have a magical element to them.
Mm-hmm. Do you sell those also to the general public or?
Well, you can get them on Amazon. They're published by big publishers. So the Secrets of Mental Math, which has sold about 300,000 copies.
Wow. Does that amaze you?
It's, I'm humbled by it. Martin Gardner wrote that it was the best book on, on how to do math in your head. And Martin Gardner, of course, was one of my idols. I only met him once or twice.
Did you ever go to the gathering, Gardner?
I did. And I'm going to be at the gathering for Gardner this February. So if anyone's planning to go to Atlanta, middle of February, that's going to be great fun. That's where I met Martin Gardner, was at the second gathering. I have a signed copy of Annotated Alice from him. Mm-hmm. And I have another book called The Magic of Math, Solving for X and Figuring Out Y, which came out 6 years ago. And I'm currently working on a book on a mathemagical approach to fun and games. So magic and math have always been important parts of my life, my personality.
One of the other questions that you had alluded to a little bit earlier about people thinking you're wearing earpieces. Early on, did you have, or even still today, do you have people come who are having their calculators? I want you to look in my ear, make sure I've got nothing. Do you just go through that? Or you just, because I noticed that when I've seen you perform recently, you don't do that. And do you feel like that's not necessary?
Very early in my career, I had to like show, but I think very quickly it was like word just sort of spread. Oh, no, he's legit. He's like, he's just, freakishly good at math. And,
that's the word.
Where I feel lucky in terms of the success of my show, and again, I credit magic for this, was that I learned how to, I was doing magic tricks. I was doing linking rings and Forgetful Freddy and other things before I was presenting math. Mm-hmm. So it was always to me, like, you have to present this in a magical way. You have to present this in a likable way. Mm-hmm. And
it's not going to put off people.
Yeah. Because one could imagine doing the same content of my show and for the audience to come away saying, oh, I hate that. Or he makes me feel
so stupid,
or, oh, how arrogant. Right. And
you have a constant smile on your face the whole time.
Because I'm having fun. And I love the fact that the audience is having fun. And I don't even know what the secret sauce is, but for whatever reason,
it works for you.
It works. I mean, I'm an excited nerd on stage, and it's just an outgrowth of my natural personality.
When you are teaching then also, I would imagine you're looking at your students in the classroom much like it's you're on stage. And so every time you're in class is probably a performance.
It's a teaching, you have a captive audience. They literally aren't allowed to leave. If they do, you can dock points off. Yeah. I never get heckled in the classroom. to me, it is a platform. I think this is different from most professors, certainly for most math professors, was I did want to be an entertainer growing up. And I really feel that being a teacher, both in the classroom as well as in my writing, even when I'm writing from mathematics audiences, I try to inject a little bit of humor, a little bit of whimsy, just like Martin Gardner would.
Sure.
And I think as a result, people look forward to what I write.
Do you look for humor in the world to incorporate in your act, or you feel like that you're naturally funny, or do you read see what other comics are doing at the comedy clubs, or how are you influenced with your comedy, or is it all genuinely you and it's just, do you script it? And
another place I'll give a lot of credit to is the Magic Castle. When I started as a professor at Harvey Mudd College, this was back in 1989, and I had, some of the magicians out there knew me from my college days. And I auditioned and have been performing at the castle almost every single year since 1990. But when you work the castle, you work three shows a night,
right?
Seven straight nights.
Right.
That allows your patter to grow in an organic way. Mm-hmm. When I've tried to be scripted, it comes off stale.
I understand.
Maybe even
I've seen that.
Horny, know?
Sounds like you're reading a script in your mind.
Yeah, that's right. Imagine writing a book report and then talking about the book report, it still comes across as if it was sort of written and not spoken. So,
so you have a general outline, you're saying.
Yeah. And I just say what's natural. And then as the show gets repeated and repeated, certain phrases just come in very naturally. When you say something funny and the audience laughs at it, then the next show, 30 minutes later, you say it again. But and the next day, 24 hours later, you say it again. And then it's permanently in your show.
Okay.
So, I mean, I suppose if I were more disciplined, you would take notes after each show.
I was about to say, you don't take notes.
By having it done at the castle, the way a lot of my show evolved in my early years, 35 years ago, it was, the back-to-back just made for a very natural, natural growth.
Yeah, most people don't have that opportunity because they're doing a one-off show wherever.
But you're right. What you should do then is take notes. Like, oh, you said something that was funny.
Yeah.
Try it again and then try it the next time. Or you say something that's funny and the next time it didn't get a laugh. Try it again. It still didn't get a laugh. Okay, it wasn't funny. You know, but... But, you know, and my act honestly hasn't changed in content terribly much. If you saw me perform at Abbott's in 1980 and you look at what I'm doing now, you'd say, yeah, that's the same guy. a little
still
grayer,
a magic
a little
square.
Heavier, a little, still some multiplying numbers and he does a magic square, calculates birthdays, and I guess to some degree, because magic wasn't my only thing, I felt it was at a good place and it was at a, and so I felt comfortable kind of keeping it there. And I wasn't like I was doing it every single day that I'd get tired of doing the same thing. I every time I'm in front of an audience, it's a gift and, I'm having fun with
it. Well, because you're not doing it all the time. You've got a full-time job.
And I've got, that's right. A full-time job, other things, that I'm interested in. I've got other passions.
Your wife.
I have my wife. I have my family. I have other hobbies. I have my other professional obligations. So, it's the show is, if you saw me now, you saw me 40 years ago, you'd say, but now he's more polished. Now he's a little less awkward. Now he's, funnier.
Well, you had said when I was watching your show that, like Square Roots, we were just talking about, that, not only you describe in your lecture about how to calculate this, but also that you've been doing it long enough that you actually remember and memorize a lot of these numbers.
Only the ones up through, say, the squares of two-digit numbers.
Two-digit numbers.
So the number you gave me, 565, I don't have the answer to that memorized. Now, what I might have, because I'm sure in my lifetime, I have done every three-digit number squared at least once, maybe a few times.
But two digits you do all the time.
Two digits I do all the time. I know those, right. I can do those literally in my sleep.
So, so you don't have to go through the calculations in your head like I would because you've done it so many times they're memorized.
So
it's like a night's tour, you know, where you've memorized where they're going to be going.
That's right. That's right. And I'm trying to say, oh, do I go into all the details? No, I'm not going to go into all the details. So I'm actually doing the calculating by the method I use is... It goes left to right. So I can actually start to say my answer while I'm still calculating the rest of the answer.
In your mind.
In my head. So, that was as a kid. That's why I did it left to right. Cause I wanted to look smarter. I wanted to look faster. Cause if you give me the problem and you said 565 squared and I say 300 and, I've calculated half the answer. And I could start to say it, and mentally you say, "Oh my God, he just said it immediately." But
I see your point because typically, when you're saying left to right, because typically for people who don't understand what you're saying, is that when we're multiplying a number or whatever
on
paper, you go from right to left, and you follow those
the
columns.
Ones digit, the tens, the hundreds, the thousands, and that's backwards. But we read numbers left to right, we pronounce numbers left to right, and with a little practice, you can and should
calculate
left to right. So, like when 565 squared, I am going to give a little detail. I begin by going up 35 to 600, down 35 to 530, do 600 times 530. Now I'll pause there. 600 times 530 is 6 times 53 with three zeros attached is 318,000. You could stop right there and you'd have a great estimate of the answer. Mm-hmm. To get it exactly, all you have to add is the square of 35, which is easy to calculate, but I know it anyway, is 1,225. And when I add those, I get 319,225.
And all that's done just in an instant.
It's all done, but it's done left to right. So as when I get the 318,000 and I know I'm going to have to add something to it, I'm starting to say the 319,225.
We're going to take a quick commercial break from our sponsor, Poe's Magic Conference, coming up in Baltimore, Maryland on March 15th, 16th, and 17th. That's right. That's just about a week away. Now is the time to register. Another great convention that's going to be coming up here this year is going to be Poe's Magic Conference. That's going to be March 15th, 16th, and 17th. And I have with me now the main organizer, Mr. Vince Wilson. Hi there, Vince. How are you, sir?
Hey, Scott. Thank you for having me on again.
You're welcome. Glad to have you here. Now, in the past, we've had some really tremendous performers and lecturers and lineup, and also some good dealers who have unique things that we really haven't seen before. First of all, let's talk a little bit about some of the people who are going to be performing and then a couple of the dealers' names.
Okay, fantastic. Yeah, this year, our keynote speaker is Larry Haas, we're very excited to have him back from Mystery School. Last time we had Jeff McBride, and we're in a Mystery School kick at the moment. we have our wonderful presenters and performers this year. We have Crystal Younglow, Paul Prater, Paul Nofziger, David Parr, who won on Penn and Teller Fools, one of the more popular foolers from that show.
Yep.
Professor BC, one of the, you probably never heard of him if you're a mainstream magician, but he is a genius when it comes to creating and developing magic, and one of the greatest theatrical magicians in the world, mm-hmm. as far as I'm concerned. Lindsay Noel from there will be there. She was also on Penn & Teller Fools. Our mutual friend Zeke Powers, Terry Tyson, my friend Tom Wilson will be doing a presentation on marketing yourself, which is, every magician needs to know that. And this is true. He's an authority on that topic.
And then some of the dealers then you have as well who are going to be.
All these magicians will have dealer tables to sell their lecture notes and effects they design, that sort of thing. We also have John Gilmore, who from Blind Eye Magi. We have Arcane Relics there, and a couple of local regional ones like the Magic Warehouse. And we're going to have effects from myself, and also Stevens Magic will have a table there also. I don't want to say these until they're actually confirmed and bought tables, but we have a couple of deals with a few people. We're going to be making announcements on very soon at the website, posemagicconference.com.
What I think is very amazing and interesting about this is when I go to Poe's Magic Conference, the dealers are very eclectic, I guess is the best way of saying it. They're not your usual dealers. Even, of course, you go to Magic Live, you see a lot of dealers you may not see elsewhere. Because I know, for example, Mark Mason may only show at Magic Live and a couple of other things. Likewise, there are people like you had mentioned, Paul Prater and some others who are there, and Arcane Magic, Joe Daniels and some others who have things they bring, and I have not seen a group of people getting together, of dealers like this, of having such different and unique things. Now, one of the things, of course, today is popular in mentalism and the storytelling type of magic would be some electronic wizardry, but that's not necessarily the way that all this works. I think it's very much the old style, and it's really good and entertaining stuff that people are going to be selling. So, this is a good place to come and get something that no one else is doing in their shows.
That's correct. Yeah, you can guarantee that you're going to see amazing wonders of creation by these magicians that are not available anywhere else. All right, mm-hmm. You're going to see effects and magic that no one else is performing. So, if you're interested in that, if you're tired of everyone doing the same tricks you were doing, you should definitely go to a conference like this. Come to Poe's Magic Conference and get magic that no one else in the region is doing. You'll be the only one.
Yeah.
People remember that.
And again, that's going to be March 15th, 16th, and 17th in Baltimore, Maryland. And for more information, you can go to
PoesMagicConference.com. That's PoesMagicConference.com.
And now back to our conversation with Arthur Benjamin.
When you're talking to your students, then do you teach them these methods, or are you teaching math, or are you teaching trigonometry, or
what? I'm Harvey Mudd College is a university, a 4-year college, and the students are really smart. They come in having taken calculus in high school. Mm-hmm. So the math that I teach them starts with what you might call calculus 2, and then it's on to other subjects like discrete mathematics, probability, statistics, linear algebra. And so they're well beyond arithmetic. But if it's the last day of classes and we've covered all the material and we're just looking for something fun, I might do a day of math and magic, and they enjoy it.
But you teach them that also then, or you just perform?
I teach them in the same way that I teach all my audiences. I don't really hold anything back. If you want to learn how to calculate quickly, get my book, Secrets of Mental Math, or I've created several video courses from a company called The Great Courses. Uh-huh. And they have sold hundreds of thousands of these videos on mental math, on the joy of math, on mathematics of games and puzzles. I've got a new course coming out this spring on the Fibonacci numbers and the golden ratio.
Oh, wow.
A little bit of a niche topic, but it's actually part of my mathematical research. So I enjoyed putting that together.
That leads me to a question as well. I know there are a lot of books that have been written about magic and other kinds of topics as well. And I assume that there are a lot of books being written, maybe not as many books, about math and everything. But I was listening to a podcast recently with Mike Rowe, in which he was interviewing a fellow, and I can't remember his name, but you probably know him. I can't think, but he was talking about the power of zero and the importance of zero. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know who you're talking about, but certainly there's a lot you can say about nothing. For sure.
That was kind of what this whole podcast was about. And he was preaching the gospel of why that we should, how important zero is.
Zero has been an important number in the growth and development of civilization even. It allowed us to go from the clunky Roman numerals to the more efficient Arabic numerals that we all use today.
Yeah. Because normally you don't think of zero as a number.
Well, you know, and the ancients had trouble appreciating how you could have something representing nothing. Mm-hmm. Another concept that took centuries before it was accepted was the idea of negative numbers, right? We're comfortable with negative numbers now. We think of the number line, and everything to the right of zero is positive and to the left of zero is negative. But before you put it on a number line, the question was, how can something be less than nothing? That's impossible. And we would all say, yeah, you can't have something less than nothing.
And
so it wasn't until, gosh, almost around the time Columbus sailed that they were coming to terms. Yes, with negative numbers. So
what about fractions?
Fractions
came
at
later
least,
or?
No. Fractions you could picture. You could intuitively understand the meaning of a half or two thirds. Even the ancient Egyptians used fractions as a fundamental part of their arithmetic system. So fractions have been around for thousands of years. Negative numbers only for hundreds of years, believe it or not. Yeah.
Well, I like to kind of mess with my grocer when I go to the deli, and I'll say, can you give me 5/16 of of ham?
Yeah. That's funny.
So in developing this, then also, I mentioned about how you've not been working a lot of conventions because you have another life and other things that you have done. You don't frequently attend or perform
and,
at conventions.
And I've been a very busy performer too. So
corporations mainly, I assume?
For universities and schools and...
Harvey Mudd send you out on tour?
I wish they did, but no. They've always appreciated the attention that my
school
my
gets
show,
as a result of you being out there.
Exactly. I mean, when I started teaching there, again, this is 35 years ago, they were a less known quantity than they are today. And it's not because of me. It's just that their graduates have been very successful. They're recognized as one of the best small engineering schools in the country. But they would joke about, you know, Harvey who, or the students say Harvey Mudd sounds like Harvard Med, which is much more impressive, you know. But because I've been busy with my own shows and they really, when I started doing the TED Talks, that was, you know, I went from doing about 40 presentations a year, mostly at schools and then in my area, to 80 a year. And they were corporate events. And
that's because the companies were watching these TED Talks. Yeah, and they heard about you and they said, we want to
have. Someone would see that and they said, that would be great. And, that was a real game changer for me.
But there were three different talks.
But as a result, I didn't have time to do magic conventions.
Oh.
If I'm out of town for two weekends a month, I can't tell my family, you know, I'm going to go off to this, IBM convention or something like that. So, now I've got a little more time. I'm
You're
closer.
Not retired yet, are you?
I'm getting close. So just a couple more years, just because there's so much on my bucket list that I still want to do. I still love teaching.
What do you want to do? What's on your bucket list?
There are books I have to write. I literally am writing now on a fun and mathematical approach to fun and games. I've got a couple books, believe it or not, on my other passion, which is backgammon. And I'm as serious about backgammon as I am about mathematics.
It's not just strategy, but there are also some numbers, I think, involved in all that.
A little bit of math goes a very long way, and I am interested in the game both from an intellectual level and actually being a tournament player and finding ways to improve other people's play in backgammon. Mm-hmm. So I've got books on that I want to write.
That's a whole subculture, completely
separate from magic.
It's like Dungeons and Dragons. I mean, people who really are into that.
Well, a different crowd. I would say the backgammon crowd is sort of a mixture of the nerdiness of chess players with the seediness of poker players. You know, sort of at that intersection, uh-huh. You'll find the backgammon
players.
Community. I mean, they're all shapes and sizes and stuff, and I'm one of the nerdier backgammon players out there. But it's a fun group. It's a great group.
So I've got
that I want to do. You know, I've just. Just my wife and I enjoy traveling. We want to continue to travel the world, and it'll be easier to do that without a full-time teaching schedule.
Do you think that you could also give lectures as magic lectures? I mean, because you do lecture this.
I do.
And you could,
I do.
So
please,
whenever that you
invite
can,
me, and if I can make it, or we can find a time when I'm in your neighborhood, if I'm doing a show somewhere in a city nearby.
Do you have a schedule that's posted someplace?
You could look at arthurbenjamin.info, I-N-F-O, mm-hmm. and there's a place that lists where I've been and where I'm going.
Yeah. Because I would think that there'd be a lot of clubs, magic clubs in particular, that would want to have this as something that's a little bit different, and they could also invite their families to actually come,
for sure.
Just magicians.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that's the thing about my show is that it does appeal to, you know, from kids to PhDs. So,
you are not exposing magic from the standpoint of, because it's, nope. You're exposing math.
I would never expose something that most magicians are doing. I open my math show, by the way, with a magic trick. With an invisible deck of all things.
Yeah.
I never explain that, of course, but right. I want to set the tone for the audience to see this as a, don't think of this as a math talk. How boring does that sound? Think of this as a magic show.
Yep.
And then they're relaxed, and then I can entertain them with the math that I do. So, and that works. That goes pretty well. Anyway, so I love doing, I love going to magic conventions. I love going to magic clubs.
It's just when you're traveling, talk about, you know, why traveling overseas. When I traveled to England, or I was just recently in Germany, and I was lecturing in Munich and Berlin, I tried to try to put something in, and also I want to see some magicians and have some fun. And while I'm there, let me just, if you want me to lecture, I can give you a lecture also. And I do.
And I got to say, magicians are just so damn clever. I go to these talks and they're sharing. I mean, you might think of magicians as a secretive group, but no, they're so willing to share. And, I get the same enjoyment out of magic as I do out of math, and somebody saying, oh, look at this beautiful pattern we've discovered, and look at the reason why this pattern works, you know, like, oh, that's so clever. And I get the same thing watching watching the lecturers here. It's like I just brilliant ideas. And
now, I mentioned earlier about the Knights Tour, which is for those who are unfamiliar with the Knights Tour, essentially that you're wanting to go through over the whole board, and not like a knight would, you know, one up, two over, or two up and one over, and never landing on the same square twice. And that's a matter of memorization of a certain number pattern and everything then as well.
Is and in fact, you can do it without any memorization at all. There's a method that I call the four diamonds method,
really?
Which, I could show it to you now. Mm-hmm. And in 2 minutes, you could be doing it there without any,
it took me to memorize this.
No memorization needed. I don't perform the Knights Tour because I have not yet thought of, I've thought about it for forever, but I had never thought of a way of presenting it that fit my style that would be entertaining.
Do you ever work trade shows?
Only occasionally.
And I mention that because Lior Manor has, Lior Manor, out of Israel has an
idea. Oh, yeah, yeah, I know Lior, yes.
Okay.
In fact, I was in Israel a year ago, as part of my sabbatical, and, I worked with Lior, on a couple of things. I mean, I performed at, one of the magic clubs in Tel Aviv and, and in Israel, by the way, everyone's a mentalist.
You know, that seems to be true.
He's going to be my audience. Yeah. And it's like, because there are a lot of, great successful, mentalists who come out of Israel. And, anyway, so Lior was saying, no, everyone in the audience is, 90% of them are mentalists.
Yeah. And so they probably fully appreciated
that. So they did because it was different. It was refreshing and it has an element of legitimate, honest, right? If you can present some things to, let's say you do want to, be a successful mentalist and you want the audience to convince that you could do amazing things with your mind. It's great to be able to do some actual amazing things with your mind that don't require trickery, whether it's solving a Rubik's Cube quickly or doing some quick mental calculations or cube roots or a Knight's Tour or a magic square. Mm-hmm. All those things you can do, a calendar calculating, Scott, what year were you born?
1951.
And what month?
November.
November what?
21.
And that was a Wednesday.
Okay.
Check it out. Google it.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, but it's great that I can even tell somebody something about themselves that they didn't even know about themselves.
Interesting. You know, there was something along that line years ago that was in the electronic grimoire. There was an early electronic forum that we had used, and someone had published a way of going back and figuring the, exactly what you had done there. And I did it for a short time and I've lost that template in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I forgot how to do that. But I think that's a wonderful thing of being able to tell somebody the day. It's not just that. For an example, like for the future date. In other words, that I'm going to be coming back to this convention. It's going to be, let's say, next year, on January the 12th. What day of the 12th fall on?
Right. And the math works for any year, for any century. And by the way, I learned what you saw me do.
Yeah.
I learned out of a magic book that half the magicians in this conference own. It was called 13 Steps to Mentalism by Tony Corinda. And book three of the 13 steps was on sort of super mentality, things like calculating and memory and Knight's Tours and all that. And I read that in high school, and that was a very early influence on me, and that including the calendar calculating. I explain it now in a slightly different way than in the Corinda book because I think it's a little faster and easier and more modern.
Uh-huh.
But the same idea is there.
Wow. Yeah, because there are so many different things I think that a person can incorporate that kind of a thing. So in other words, if you're doing, I know a lot of magicians will add mentalism and might even have a small illusion or something that they're trying to show their audiences, and audiences will pick up saying, well, I like this or that. But sometimes they're going to be doing something that is math magic. Mm-hmm. I think that is like, wait a minute. That was real, though. Just like you were talking about earlier, it's like I can't believe that he's bending a spoon with his mind. I mean, I know there must be a trick to it, but when it comes to that, that there's no trick to it. It's a skill that one can be taught.
That's right,
and it's not something that is only you can do. Like some people are, just Barbara Streisand's a great singer. I'm never going to be, like her.
But you can learn to sing better.
Okay.
You'll never be Streisand, but you will. But you can be a better singer than you are today. Mm-hmm. And I don't think most people are going to want to invest the hundreds or thousands of hours that I have put into my calculating practice. But you can be a much better calculator. You can be much more comfortable with numbers than you are today, using some pretty simple ideas that don't require too much practice.
Yeah. And for those who want to learn that,
the best thing is my book, because it's, you can get it for about $12 on Amazon. It's called Secrets of Mental Math. I also have it as a video course. If you go to the Great Courses, the formerly called the Teaching Company, sometimes called Wondrium, but the Great Courses, has five going on six different video courses that I've created on math. One of their best sellers is Secrets of Mental Math.
You said you had three different TED Talks. I was wanting to get back to that as well. How did one differentiate from the other, or were they just variations?
They're completely different. The first one, which, by the way, came as a direct result of being seen at the gathering for Gardner.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, Chris Anderson, who's the head of TED, was there. He saw me give a talk of all things about Fibonacci numbers and said, I think that would make for a wonderful little TED Talk. And a year later, I got a call and said, we'd like to invite you to perform at TED. And he said, you can talk about anything you want. They were much looser then than they are now. And I said, well, if they're going to, I think he wanted me to do a Fibonacci talk. And I said, well, gee, if I'm going to do something for potentially millions of people, or even just thousands of VIPs in the audience, I'm going to do what I've done thousands of times.
I feel comfortable.
And I did my subset of my Mathemagic show, which got standing ovation and again went viral, and it changed my life. Mm. Most important show I've ever done. It was done in 2005. It went online around 2007, 2008. That's just when they were putting these things out there. It was at one point in the top five of all TED Talks viewed. I mean, wow. That was a long time ago, but very exciting. And anyway, so because that one was successful, a few years later, they were doing TED, and they were doing it out in Palm Springs, which is close to where I live. I live in the Los Angeles area in Southern California. And I said, hey, I've got a thing I'd like to talk about. And just a 3-minute rant,
right,
on calculus versus statistics. That is the math that we're taught in high school. From the moment we start learning algebra, everything after that is pushing us towards calculus. And I said, that's the wrong tip of the pyramid. If there's a course you want to be going to, it should be probability and statistics, because that you can use every day of your life.
Sure.
Nobody really uses in a conscious way calculus in their everyday life, but we take calculated risks every day, and the ability to quantify those risks and understand those risks is hugely important, whether it's financial decisions or security decisions. It's just very important. Anyways, that was a 3-minute talk on calculus versus statistics. And that surprisingly went viral too.
You made it interesting rather than being boring,
I just got up there and said, I think I just said something that people were ready to hear. And this was before the whole
boom of the internet.
Boom of, yeah.
YouTube.
Let's see. When did that one come out? The first TED Talk came out in 2000, was given in 2005, came out in 2008. This one came out in, came out in 2009, I think. And then, so the internet was well in place there, but I think people were just ready to hear it. And then in 2013, I did another TED Talk, and it was on Fibonacci numbers. I said, okay, now you want the Fibonacci talk? I can give you on how, mathematics is the science of patterns, and how it can be, that we're so focused on calculation that we're not thinking about things like inspiration and what can we do to make math more exciting. And I, as an example, I showed some beautiful patterns that involve the Fibonacci numbers, not just where they appear in nature, but actual fun little number patterns. And I ended with a slogan that became the subtitle of one of my books, which is mathematics is not just solving for X. It's also figuring out why.
Very clever. Very clever. I like that. Speaking of Fibonacci numbers then as well, of course, that those who are familiar then with the Da Vinci Code, I think that Fibonacci.
Oh, yeah. No. There was a lot of information and misinformation in that book.
Explain what a Fibonacci number is.
The Fibonacci numbers are as easy to understand as 1 + 1, which is 2. Mm-hmm. Then 1 plus 2 is 3. Then 2 plus 3 is 5. 3 plus 5 is 8. And so on. They grow in this leapfrog fashion.
Uh-huh. And you not can, exponentially, but by...
Well, they are actually, they, even though it might not look like it, they actually are growing exponentially.
Okay.
They are growing proportional to the power of the golden ratio, which is 1.618. So there's an intimate, the ratio of consecutive Fibonacci numbers.
It's the golden ratio, which I use for the pyramid?
That's one of the myths that was used for the pyramid or the Parthenon, but it is used for pentagons and beautiful rectangles.
Okay.
And
I'm getting you spun off on a different direction.
But it's the number's 1.618.
Okay.
.. 1 plus root 5 over 2 for the mathematicians listening to this. And so the Fibonacci numbers, the ratio of consecutive terms, like 5 over 3 is 1.67. 8 over 5 is 1.6. 13 over 8 is 1.625. That ratio is getting closer and closer and closer to 1.618, ..
Huh.
And so they are growing exponentially. There's all kinds of beautiful properties. There's even some fun magic tricks. And if you get my math and magic course, I have a whole lecture on the magic of the Fibonacci numbers and the golden ratio and fun stuff you can do with that.
Wow. It sounds like there's just you can go deep. As far as as you really want to go.
Oh, but by all means. I mean, that's it, like magic. You know, you can go down the math rabbit hole. You can go down the magic rabbit hole.
Right.
They're both wonderful subjects.
Do you find that magicians have been embracing that, better than mathematicians? I mean, I'm assuming that there are some math instructors who talk with you, but do you find that magicians are saying, hey, man, I'd like to add this to my act, or that I'd like to learn more?
By all means, do. I mean, I want people to...
Because you don't have any real competitors out there. You know,
even if I do, I've had the pleasure of inspiring a lot of young people who watch the TED Talks or read my books or, you know, I want to do that. And I've had a few who've, for a few years have gone on and done shows of their own. And,
right.
But the ones I know of, eventually they grew out of it. And like we grow out of passions and
sure.
subjects.
One thing
and
another.
Things. Yeah. And,
the next pretty
so
thing.
I hope if you do decide to pursue doing lightning calculations, and by all means do, you know, make it your own.
Right.
Do certain things that you can do especially well. You know, and, I mean, let's put it this way. There certainly are people out there, and I've met some of them, who blow me away with their mental calculation powers. There's a guy in Southern California, a guy named Sam Engel, might be the fastest calculator in the United States, is, you know, like, wow, he just puts me to shame. I mean,
do you have your own conventions where you kind of meet these people?
You know, there's not a large enough group, but there is an event called the Mental Calculation World Cup that takes place every 2 years in Europe.
Wow.
Sam has competed for the U.S. and I've never gone there because, well, it's expensive to fly there. There's not a whole lot of glory that comes with winning. And besides, I don't claim that I would win. There are some people who really take this and train like an Olympic event. And my calculating, even though I do it very well, is a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that to really get into peak condition would require training that I'm not willing to invest.
I was going to say, because you have another life, like you talked about, with the family and everything.
I've got my family life. I've got my backgammon life.
These other people,
it's like
they devote just to that.
Yeah, and some of them are, are not neurotypical. They are focused on just this one thing.
Just like speed cubes. I mean, some
like
people,
speed cube. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For some people, it's very much like that
Rubik's
kind of
cube.
Category. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I will, too. Though there are many people out there with profound calculating talent, I think I had the good fortune of having my original background in magic. So this is a magic podcast. I want to say, you know, hooray for magic. It's one of the best hobbies in the world. It has brought me, you know, it has defined who I am today, as a mathematician, as a backgammon player, as a writer, as a speaker,
as a professor.
I owe my success at teaching, I think, to my early career as a magician. And And I just think that's, I hope, my wish for almost everyone who's listening to your podcast is that they find a way to use magic to enhance their life. Very few are fortunate enough to be able to do it full time professionally. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if you don't. I think do two things, do magic and whatever your and is.
I love that. Do magic and. Yeah, that's true. There are few magicians in the world, or even fewer mentalists, and then fewer jugglers, because, and fewer ventriloquists, because different things take different levels of skills and attention to detail and learning this kind of a thing. But you're the only one I can think of, again, in our magic world, who does this kind of math magic. You know?
Well, so. I guess. I sure hope, and I know I am, you know, as I'm looking forward to retiring and from teaching soon,
you may see you,
you know, but I do hope other people pick up the mantle and run with it. I'm not like hoping to, you know, it's mine. I'm all mine.
You're preaching the gospel of math.
Yeah, basically. That's right. I really am. That's what I'm. I'm hopeful that what I do just turns more people into math lovers.
Have you gone around to some schools trying to teach teachers to be better teachers, to inspire them, their kids? Or, I mean, like when you go into a school?
Only when I do my presentations, I give lots. It's a show and tell.
Yeah.
And everyone's there to absorb what I'm telling. But I haven't created like full-blown training courses where teachers would come and for 12 weeks and learn the skills to teach. Not opposed to it, but I've just been busy enough that it's not part of my repertoire.
Yeah,
right?
Again, you have so many balls in the air that you're juggling.
But if you want to learn the stuff, it's all out there. Again, the Secrets of Mental Math is a great place to start. I did put out a children's book for first to fifth graders on mental addition and subtraction. So, and you can find that on Amazon. It's called The Art of Mental Calculation. And, that's out there too. And that's not very expensive either.
As we do start to wrap up, is there something that, you can demonstrate, to the listeners that, across the airwaves as they can try this at home and challenge them?
Okay. Let's try something here. Get out your calculator. Okay. Get out your calculator.
Yeah. Pause this for just a moment.
Just a moment. That's right. We can do that. We're not live. All right. So get out a calculator and I want you to think of your 4-digit PIN number. Okay. But I want you to enter it on the calculator as an 8-digit number. So you do that 4-digit PIN twice. So for example, if your PIN number was 1234, which would be a very bad PIN number, by the way, you would enter on the calculator 1234, 1234. Okay. So you got it. You got that 8-digit number. Okay. Now divide it by the number 9. We as magicians know how magical the number 9 is. Divide that 8-digit number by the number 9. Now let's see. Divide it by 9 again. All right. And
you may be getting a decimal.
Oh, you're definitely going to get some decimals in there. And now for extra security, let's divide it by your original 4-digit PIN. All right. If you do that, you should by now have something that looks like probably a 3-digit number with a bunch of decimals coming after it. So I want you to concentrate on that that whole number, if you will. And, I'm getting a feeling of count 1, 2, 3, 4. What? Oh. I see it. It's 123.469, something like that, right?
Right.
Good. All right. Well, thank you very much. And if you want to figure out how that works, talk to me later.
So those first four numbers would be your code, basically.
If you want me to reveal the explanation, well, among magicians, when you take the 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. What you have there is 1, 2, 3, 4 times the number 10,001.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And now when I divide it by 9 and divide it by 9 and divide it by 1, 2, 3, 4, then what you're going to get in the end is 10,001 divided by 81. It's 10,001 divided by 9 divided by 9.
The 9, yeah.
And that's that 1, 2, 3, 4, number that.
That's what I was saying. She said 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 9.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So that
the 1, 2, 3, the first four numbers would be your.
It's, oh, actually, no. It wasn't, it didn't have anything to do with the fact that they started with 1, 2, 3, 4. They could have started with 2, 3, 5, 8.
Okay. So they're going to end with this number.
They're going to end with that number.
Oh.
Yeah. No. And that number comes from 10,001.
It was just coincidental.
Divided
1, 2, 3, 4,
by 81. Okay. Yeah. Maybe that was a bad example for me to start with, but
you can start with any number, whatever it's going to be.
Any number.
9, 9, 9, 9, 9, whatever
it's going
to be.
Exactly. So, okay. And you'll end up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 9. Yeah.
Interesting. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. There are other magicians have done a trick like this, but they'd always end with an integer, like 73, you know, and it's like, well, that's okay, but you wouldn't expect to get a whole number as your answer. Let's get something more interesting as your answer. It looks more random. It looks more impressive.
It does. When it's going to be like a decimal number of some sort, you know, as well. Well, Arthur, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And it's always good to have a chance to see you since it's so rare.
I know. Well, let's do it in another 10 years.
We'll do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's play this in 34.
That's right.
Okay. And before I close, because the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word Podcast, I always like to ask my guests, what is your philosophy of life? What is your magic word or phrase? No, I don't mean like abracadabra, obviously something that you live by. You wake up in the morning, it charges your life.
Yeah. The advice my father gave me ages ago when I asked him for what is the, what's the secret to a happy life? And he said, without hesitation, find work that you really love. He says, see, if I could divide the world into the people I think are happy and the people who are unhappy, it's not about how much money they're making. It's not how famous they are. It's, do they like how they're spending most of their day? And if you can find work, and I think in my case, teaching is something that isn't work for me.
Right.
You know, it's fun and performing on the side. That's great fun. To me, that's what defines success.
So find what's fun and you'll be successful.
Yeah. Discover what you love and do that a lot.
I love that. Do that a lot.
Yeah.
So in other words, I got to keep having fun because you will, because after you discover that. Excellent. Arthur, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Arthur Benjamin. This is Scotty out. Well, there you go. Another educational, entertaining, and enlightening conversation. I hope that you enjoyed that as much as I did. That was really so much fun. Thank you very much, Arthur. I appreciate you being our guest here this week, and I'm sorry that it's taken so doggone long for us to finally get together and have a sit down and have a proper chat like this. But I'm glad we finally did, and we now have it in cyberspace. It will live on forever, I guess. Let's say that will. I want to remind everybody also, if you've not signed up for the pod letter, please do. If you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there you'll see a drop down or maybe a pop up that will say, please subscribe to our pod letter. And that's the best way that you can make sure that you find out about things like our contest, which is currently running, as I said, in the first part of this podcast, as well as letting you know about some suggestions from the archives if you happen to have missed some, as well as who's going to be coming up next week. We've got some great talent that you're going to be enjoying hearing from, some people you know, some people you don't know as well, but you'll get to know them better, and some people who might be completely a new friend to you as soon as you have an opportunity to listen to what all they have to say. We've got some very interesting people lined up in our docket over the next couple of months. And I also suggest, if you haven't already done so, it will be extremely helpful if you can figure out how to leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, as well as nice comments. I haven't appealed for that very hard recently, and so therefore we haven't had anybody to have gone out to give us any 5-star ratings, but I hope that you feel this is good enough to warrant that. If not, then you don't have to worry about it. Then don't list it. If it's not 5 stars, then just say attaboy. Anyhow, I appreciate you guys thinking about this podcast. And the ratings actually on iTunes does help us grow. And also, if you have a way of helping us financially with your pledges or donations, you can also do that. And the magicwordpodcast.com blog will give you some information on how that you can support us with that, your finances. All righty. Well, let's get out of here. We got some things to do, places to go, cats to shave. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to discover what you love and do that a lot. I love it. This is Scotty out.